One of the things that I most value about our Unitarian Universalist faith is its breadth, as well as its depth. Unitarianism and Universalism were two very particular heretical Christian traditions. And it is our Universalism that led our ancestors in faith to seek out wisdom in the religions beyond their own. It is this pluralism, this idea that the goodness in all religions doesn't have to be mutually exclusive, that shaped our modern UU faith into one that gives us the freedom to celebrate one another in the fullness of who we are, cultural, spiritual, religious, and beyond. Even though I have studied Hebrew and read Torah and celebrated Hanukkah and Sukkot, Purim and Passover with lots of Jewish friends, I think it's important for me to name that I am not Jewish. Hanukkah is not my holiday. And yet, I am thankful to the many Jews in our congregation who, year after year, choose to share this holiday and the ritual of lighting the Hanukkah candles with us. Our congregation is the richer for all of the beautiful ways that the Holy shines through our diversity. And so I am preaching today from a place of deep respect from the many different Jewish traditions, for Judaism is just as diverse in culture and theology and practice as any other religion. And just as there are many ways of being Jewish, there are also many ways of understanding the Hanukkah story. Earlier this morning, we heard Marin, our director of family ministry, tell the well-known version of the Hanukkah story. The Maccabees didn't take too kindly to King Antiochus threatening Jews with death who wouldn't assimilate into Greek culture and worship Greek gods, so they revolted. And against all odds, they were victorious. And when they were cleaning up the temple, which the Syrian Greeks had desecrated, the single day's worth of holy oil they found lasted for the 8 days that they needed to make more. History is, as always, more complicated than the simple stories we heard growing up as children. One of the things that this well-known version of the story leaves out is that the fighting was anything but clear-cut, with Jews on one side and Syrian Greeks on the other. The Maccabees were, by many accounts, religious zealots, staunch traditionalists, and they were willing to use force not only to resist the Syrians, but to make sure that all other Jews did too. By the time of the Maccabean revolt, many Jews fell somewhere on a spectrum of assimilation into Greek culture. Even before King Antiochus threatened death to any who wouldn't worship the Greek gods, Jews sometimes chose to accept other aspects of Greek life in order to protect their wealth or their status or just to try to fit in. It would have been difficult for Jewish business owners to navigate a culture and economy that didn't shut down every seventh day, to have to abstain from eating with the Greeks they were trying to do business with, among other things. Don't assimilate, risk death at the hands of the Greeks. Assimilate, risk the ire of the Maccabeans. Those were the choices. To make things even more complicated, some scholars have argued that the real miracle of Hanukkah wasn't the oil burning for 8 days, but that the Maccabees wound up being victorious at all. And that's because there's some historical evidence that the oil story was created by rabbis hundreds of years later, when the Jews had fallen under a new set of foreign rulers, the Romans. As Rabbi Danya Rutenberg explains, it's not clear when the story originated, but some scholars posit that rabbis under Roman rule figured it wouldn't be clever to publicly celebrate a holiday marking the violent overthrow of a foreign government. So instead, they came up with the much more kid-friendly version about the oil, which conveniently lends itself to much more spiritualized interpretations of Hanukkah. Why was it 8 days originally? There are a few theories. One suggests that an 8-day festival of lights was widespread in Greek, Roman, and Babylonian culture. And another notes that that's how long the Greeks celebrated their military victories. These two ideas, that the Maccabean revolt pitted Jews against other Jews, and the idea that the oil story may have been a fiction created in order to protect those celebrating Hanukkah under Roman rule, for some, these two ideas may be enough to ruin the holiday. For some, holidays and traditions lose all meaning if it is possible that they are not literally true, or if the heroes of the story turn out to have struggled with right and wrong, good and bad, who's in and who's out, just as much as we all do. But for me, the questions and complications add more meaning, and they make me more curious about the different miracles and mysteries revealed in the complexity. What is preserved in the story about the oil that maybe couldn't be safely taught or told all those centuries later under Roman rule? What is it about the oil story that helped preserve that wisdom that generations of Jews have taken untold risks to carefully pass on to their children's children's children? What wisdom do the different iterations of the Hanukkah story have to offer to people today? Because while Jews in this country are not threatened by kings hell-bent on their assimilation, they still live amid the pressures of a powerful dominant culture that is not Jewish. Only now the hegemony is Christian instead of Greek. Just a few days ago, I heard from a Jewish friend of mine. After years of resisting their pleas, she relented and bought her kids a Christmas tree. They decorated it together with blue and white ornaments while listening to Hanukkah music, but it is sobering to me how similar her struggle to navigate American Christian culture is to those of her ancestors who struggled to navigate the Hellenistic world. I've also heard talk among parents, some Jewish and some from other non-Christian backgrounds, who dread pretty much the whole month of December. It takes a lot of energy to help their kids live through the Christmas season, especially at school. From Christmas plays and concerts to Santa-themed worksheets to ornament crafts in the classroom, so much is focused on Christmas this time of year, and the onus is nearly always on individuals to single themselves out if they don't want to participate. It is with all of this complexity in mind that I wonder if one of the mysteries and miracles at the heart of Hanukkah is simply that it is still being celebrated. The dynamic reality at the heart of the stories of the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, that which has held the Jewish people through occupation by the Syrian Greeks, then occupation by the Romans, that this dynamic reality holds them still through ongoing conflict around Jerusalem and the challenges of living in the diaspora. What if the miracle is the survival not only of the Jewish people, but of Jewish religion and culture and identity, when monarchs and mighty military forces have done everything they could to obliterate them? Mayim Bialik, the neuroscientist and actress who plays Amy Farrah Fowler on the Big Bang Theory show, has said that all Jewish holidays to her are basically about the same thing. They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. In today's world, the message of a power mightier than kings and armies holding us together, holding us through the storm, of a community struggling yet somehow succeeding to hang on to who we are in the midst of powerful forces that threaten us, that is a message that resonates through time. But what does it mean for us here today? What does this message mean for us in this congregation, some of us Jewish, but many of us not? I think one answer might be the kind of miracle that the community of Billings, Montana, experienced 25 years ago. As Janice Cohn has written about, Billings began to be infiltrated by skinheads and white supremacist groups, and hate literature began to appear in people's mailboxes. Most of the community initially felt that ignoring the hate mail was the way to go. Oh, just ignore them and they'll go away, was the thought. But Wayne Inman, the chief of police and the executive director of the Montana Association of Churches, both knew they needed to do something to send the message that hate was not welcome in their town. After a lot of work and education, various different organizations in the community took out a large ad in the town newspaper condemning the acts of hatred, and thousands of residents put their name on it. As Hanukkah approached, the town synagogue began receiving bomb threats, and its cemetery was desecrated. Soon after that, two homes with menorahs in the windows were vandalized, and a brick thrown into the window of a child's room, landing mere feet away from said sleeping child. The child's parents were longtime activists in the community, and together with the Association of Churches Executive Director Margaret McDonald and a UCC pastor, Reverend Torney, they hatched a plan to have people of all faiths and none display menorahs in the windows of their houses. At first, more windows were broken and houses were vandalized, but that only strengthened everybody's resolve. When the town synagogue held its Hanukkah services, there wasn't enough room for everyone from the community who showed up to fit inside, and people surrounded the synagogue to protect it. Soon after that, the town newspaper took out an entire sheet where they printed a menorah so that people could cut it out and tape it into their windows. This is the solidarity that this town experienced. Eventually, the attack stopped. Reverend Torney, that UCC minister who helped coordinate the solidarity effort, he explained the town's experience in this way. "This is almost embarrassing. It's not the Garden of Eden here. We have huge problems, but people are trying. I believe this could happen in any community. This town is a little smaller, the air is a little cleaner, but this is every place. It's not unique here. If it is, we are all in big trouble. I think what happened with this whole menorah thing is that permission was given for people to be good. People are often told that, but in this way, we gave them a way to do it." In one of his letters to his congregation a few years ago, Rabbi Jesse Olitsky of New Jersey talked about the Shamash candle on the Hanukkah. "It's the one Maron talked about, the one set slightly apart from the others, the one used to light the other candles. It isn't one of the eight Hanukkah candles, it's set apart. And the word Shamash is translated to mean helper or servant. And this rabbi invited all of his people to be the Shamash, to be the servants of light, of freedom, of good in the Hanukkah season." I want to thank all of you for your support of this congregation, support which, among other things, provides me with limited professional expenses. Sometimes I use those funds to deepen my ongoing professional learning, but other times I use them in the service of justice. And as part of my own effort to practice what I preach, I will be leaving shortly after today's service to join clergy from around the country and from many traditions at our nation's southern border. There, just south of San Diego, we will gather to demonstrate our support for the South and Central American asylum seekers who are being detained, many separated from their family members, and who are suffering terrible treatment in tent camps along our border. This December, whatever holidays you celebrate or don't, I invite you to be a servant of goodness. I invite you to accept permission to be good whenever and wherever you have the opportunity, whether it's with your neighbor next door or our neighbors on the other side of our border. Because the way that a human heart can be changed, can shift to open itself to a wider love, the way a community can transform to support those who are vulnerable within it, those are just as much a mystery and a miracle as one day of oil burning for eight or any military victory. May the dynamic force that holds our communities together against all that would tear us apart, the love that holds each and every one of us through every storm, the inspiration that moves us to take risks for the sake of an unlikely yet precious freedom, the compassion that leads us to care for all of our neighbors, may all of that power be in us and with us, now and forever. Amen.